exceptionnel.
Sagosen. Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De er i semifinale igjen!
The Uninformed Handball Hour is with you once again, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm getting the feeling that things may be getting back to normal pretty soon, so I don't want to count all the eggs in my basket just yet, but I feel we may have a season next season. We're joined here, of course, by Chris O'Reilly. It's the gruesome twosome, back to the original duo for this week only. How are you, Chris?
I'm not too bad. Yeah, Alex too busy living up Danish summer life in a cabin somewhere in the countryside to join us today. And yeah, I don't know. It's it feels like sport is coming back, you know. We saw Vesprem starting to train last week. We saw the Bundesliga football return. La Liga is coming back soon. The Premier League is probably going to come back. I mean, that's a whole different universe with football. But you feel with handball, people are slowly but surely going to start get training again. I mean, I've been training 2 weeks ago. So, you know, handball in Sweden is back underway. But I think when it comes to top-level handball and watching handball that, you know, we actually want to see, not third division Swedish handball, then we're going to have to wait a bit longer.
Yeah, to match that whole idea that things are getting back to normal, we have an action-packed episode today. We have Bent Dahl from CFOC, who is now the head coach of CFOC, and he had a lot to say. And then we also have Philip Mishoff, a man who's been very active on Twitter recently, and he's been giving us lots of wonderful updates of what's going on in Vardar. So we'll be talking to him a little bit later.
So without further ado, we'll go into our first interview of this action-packed episode with AHF Master Coach and now CFOC Head Coach Bent Dahl joining us from Norway. Let's go. There he is. Hi.
Oh.
Good stuff.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Where are you at the moment? Are you in Hungary or back home in Norway?
No, I have been in Norway since the coronavirus started.
Okay.
We went home and just a couple of days after, they were totally locked down every place. So we are stuck in our apartments in Norway.
I took that executive decision to go back to Ireland as well, and now I can't leave for another month, so I'm a bit stuck here as well. Could be worse, though.
So. Yeah, but for me, it's good. So
yeah, and so what have you been doing with your time?
At the moment, right after this crisis was started, I was a little bit pissed, and didn't know what to do, but then. Yeah, my girlfriend, you know, she was taking me back and said, oh, you can rebuild our apartments. So I have been a handyman. That's a good painting walls and ceilings, refresh everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of putting up bits of a shed, painting it, sanding it, you know. I've done enough sanding now for the next 20 years, so I think I'd be happy when this is all over.
It's a big investment for me too. So everybody is happy. So then I can return to Hungary and do my humble work without any. And I was preparing my wedding because I will get married the 12th of June. So also do a little bit about that.
Oh, congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Is it going to be a smaller occasion now because of all this, or will you be able to have it? Yeah.
Yes. It's totally different, of course. With we have to have this social distance, and we cannot have too many people. And in the restaurant, we can just have table for six persons together. And all these small rules. And yeah,
how do you put the ring on if you have the social distance? Sorry, terrible joke.
No. This is my second marriage, so we will do it in the morning before we really go.
Okay.
This is more like a private ceremony, so it's not this big church and everything. No, it's okay. And of course, I have done a lot of humble work. I have the preparation ready for the next season, and analyzing all our results from especially the top matches, I will do a lot of work. So we will see, make a new playbook for the next squad next year. So everybody has everything for the systems and how we want to play. So yeah, it will be interesting to see what they, when they get it.
How are you feeling at this stage? Now you've had a bit of time, I guess, to deal with what happened, the big news and probably one of the biggest controversies of the handball world since this coronavirus, with the Hungarian Handball League being completely null and voided, with Siófok after you guys beat FTC and Győr in 1 month right before the pandemic. Put yourself in a great situation for all of that to basically count for nothing in the end.
Yeah, it was very, we were reacted with anger and were really disappointed in the beginning. But what can we do? This decision is still, for me, unbelievable, but we cannot do anything. We can just look back and see all our good results. We know what we did. We were in a good position when everything was locked down. We were number two in the league. We were in the semi-final in the European Cup. We were in the quarter-final in the Hungarian Cup. So everything was open, but I'm not now with a little distance. I'm little, even more motivated to continue our work. So now I have, I'm relaxed. So I'm not still pissed about it. So yeah, I can handle my emotion about this. We cannot do anything. So
You've gone into Zen mode about it.
We can repeat our success from these last games next season. So if we can do that, we maybe have to also climb up to be number one, and then it's no discussion.
Absolutely.
So we for hunting our dreams and goals. So.
From like a legal perspective, there was nothing you could do in terms of you approaching the Hungarian Federation about having the decision overturned?
No. We can't. They were doing this decision, and for me, it's a little bit about protectionism, but I don't like that. But that's also the little bit about how Hungarian handball is at the moment. So that's a little bit sad, but we cannot do anything. So we cannot push. Our club has done everything, and of course the players has take the voices and use every opportunity to tell the world that what's happened. But in the end, nothing. Nothing will change. We knew it from the beginning that nothing will change. So. Yeah, we just have to accept it and play. If I don't, I can just pack my suitcase and go back to Norway. If I want to continue in Hungary, I have to leave this discussion behind me and work forward. So, no, we have to work with handball. This political part, it's the lawyers and the others can take this outside the court. So, yeah, we will see.
Okay. How does it look now for the next couple of months? I see in Hungary that there is some training started. I saw Veszprém have started to begin training in the halls, and you're in Norway at the moment. You've got your wedding coming up. What's the plan for you to go back to Hungary and get the new season started with? I see a lot of new players coming into the squad as well.
I will return on 15th of June. So I will be back then, and we have the team will start the 1st of July. Then we have 2 months for preparation.
You've had a year and a half basically as the assistant to Tor, and now coming in to take over. It's almost like a, you know, this perfect transition for you to come in as a head coach. You're not coming in out of the cold into a new team or players you don't know, which I guess is a bit of an unusual situation for you as well. How much are you looking forward to being the main man now for at least the next 2 years?
Yeah. For me, it's of course, it's a good opportunity to be a head coach. But in the end, it's about the system. I will continue the work Tor and me started for 2 years ago. And this is my main point, to take this club a little bit longer. Because Yeah, I knew everybody now, and all the system I knew, so it's nothing new. We just have to continue the work. This club is still quite young, and it's just a couple of 3-4 years they start to come up with the big rules. So for me, it's my main point is to bring them a little bit higher and be better every year. So my motivation is there to continue to run my work from the beginning.
All during this whole time and all the stuff with the virus and the uncertainty that kind of brings, does it kind of dampen or hamper your, I wouldn't say motivation, but your outlook for the next season, thinking that you're kind of, it's maybe a little bit unsure of what next season will even look like in terms of, will there be fans in the halls and loads of stuff?
We don't know. We can just cross our fingers. Then everything will start 6th of September or something. But you don't know yet, because you don't know if they will, if this virus will coming back and a new top on it or not. So we just have to continue work like this new season will start like normal and take it from there. It's nothing, I cannot do anything. So I'm not very worried about it. I'm more like how to get all the team back on track, because now you have almost think about the team like injured players, because they haven't played handball for almost 2.5 months before they go on holiday. So now they will have more 5-6 months without anything. So it's more how we can coming back on in good shape without any new injuries, because everybody, you know, we have players from Spain, we have players from France, Germany, Hungary, and a lot of places, Croatia, Serbia. So and it's totally different, in this coronavirus, it was totally different way to move. For example, in Spain, they were just locked down in the apartments for a long period. So, you know, it's not easy to stay fit in your apartment. Mm-hmm. They all the players have done a fantastic job, but, you know, it's hard to be on this top level if you are locked down for so long time. So we have to take it easy, I think, build them up. Yeah.
And did you give them like an official tasks to in terms of fitness during the time? Yeah,
not me, but our physical coach and our physiotherapist. They have weekly new programs and more or less daily contact with the players to reach them and have the right exercises, because it's so different. You cannot just have one program and give to the girls, because it's very different environment they are in. So we try to do the best out of the situation, and of course these girls are so professional, so they will try whatever to come back on in a good shape. So for me, it's okay. I trust them, and I trust my physical coach and the team around us for everything. So I think it's okay.
It's so unusual, so different to what we're used to talking about in handball, where players are usually overtrained or overplayed, and you know, now they're going to have months and months without playing. Does that also change your beginning of preseason as well? Because you can't just go straight into handball with the players, or maybe some of them you can, some you can't, because you have to actually take a look at all of them individually and say, okay, this is what we have to work with you, because throwing them onto a court on day one could be disastrous.
That's true. So we have some of our players who are in Skiafok at the moment. They have the opportunity to have full trainings inside the hall. They are working good individual. They can shoot. They can use our physical gym, and they're running, and they use the physiotherapy and everything. So they are in full control. So, but the task will be when the everybody are returned to Sheerfolk, we have to have a full screening of everybody, and then we can start this training to find out which level and how hard or tough we can be in the beginning, because we know if we are a little bit too tough in the start now, we can have a lot of problems later in the season. So yeah, we will see. But again, I trust the people also around me, and we have a good team around these handball girls, so I think we will manage it.
And have you talked at all about possible testing of the players during the season or before when they come back? Has there been any conversation at all with the Federation about that kind of stuff?
No. We will do our stuff and we will see what happened. But again, we don't know about this at the moment in Hungary. If we want to go back, it's 14 days quarantine. So in this quarantine, we have just stay home. But I don't know if they will open it. And of course, in the hall at the moment, we have this systematic. They are all always checked, and we have this all this stuff to clean the hands, and also this corona testing in the hall. So, but I don't know yet what will happen when we return. I hope 1st of July, I hope the situation will be much better and easier for everybody. So we don't need to think too much about this part of it. But the second, it's also not just physical, but also mentally. We have to work a little bit different mentally to prepare this season, I think, because what will happen if we are just going into a season when we play without any spectators? We are playing with nobody, you know? So it's really tough, because normally you have full house, and maybe the biggest motivation for every player is to play in full house and the supporters and everybody. So it's for me it's very hard to say what will happen, but we have to be ready for everything, I think. So I have started also to think about this mental stuff.
And well, we've seen with football now, the Bundesliga is back just over a week with empty arenas or some cardboard cutouts as well. And I think that's going to be the case in Spain and eventually England as well. But I mean, for handball, that seems to be kind of a tricky topic as well, because, you know, maybe in football you can get away with having these matches and the money that the TV contracts bring into it. But for handball, there's a lot of clubs that rely on spectators and the money that they bring in. How is the financial aspect with Sjofok? And I'm sure you've spoken to some coaches around Europe as well, where the situation is probably very uncertain at the moment.
It's also the same as our club, but of course we have big support from our director and our management around, but we will see. We will be in the same situation, of course. If we don't have any spectators at all, of course it will interrupt the total, the budget or whatever. But this is not the biggest issue in Hungary at the moment, I think. But we are quite lucky, but we don't know what's happened. That's, if you don't have the spectators, maybe some of the sponsor will go away in because what will why you need to be sponsor if you don't have any spectators and you cannot be a part of this totally circus? So I'm not sure. And it's not just about the handball, but you know, all these factories and companies, they have also interrupted about this coronavirus. So they maybe not take this money to the sport. And this maybe can be a very tough point for a lot of clubs in Europe. So sorry to say, but I think this year will be so tough for some of the clubs, and they will not survive, I'm sure. I'm sure they're not on this level, and it will be big change, I think.
So if you look at the kind of the bigger picture, what did you make of the EHF's decision to kind of hold on to their like highlight events, the Final Fours of the season, and push them into next season? I mean, is that something you would agree with, or what did you think of that?
First time I was a little bit laughing about it. It's not nothing about the, but for me, it was totally strange and weird about it. How can you do this? You know, the players who have take the part to make the way to the Final Four, and they have totally another squad and they play with another team. But in the end, if you see a little bit in the bigger perspective, it's okay, I think, because this will be an one-time event. It's not any, for me, it's not controversial. The way to the Final Four, it's maybe hard for some of the other clubs who are not in the Final Four, because you never know in the quarterfinals what will happen. But when you're not playing the quarterfinal, you cannot have the possibility to go there. So for me, it's not a big case. I think they will do the best for what they can do in this special situation, because nobody has been in this situation before. So it's a lot of people have a lot of ideas, but in the end, it's somebody has to take the decision. And of course, you will disappoint a lot, but maybe somebody will be happy as well. So I think it's not the biggest case. I'm a little bit more worried about how they can play the other European Cups for the next season. If this virus will continue, how can we travel around Europe with 20, 25 people? That's maybe the biggest challenge, not the Final Four in Christmas. I think a lot of teams, Spain, France, Germany, Norway, Hungary, Romania, it would be a big challenge.
Yeah, because I think one of the biggest challenges for a lot of teams traveling around and playing all these games in European Cup competitions is the injuries that come with it. And maybe next season it's not only injuries, but maybe a player might get the virus and then it passes on to three or four other players. And then all of a sudden you have injuries plus virus problems and it becomes very, very complicated.
Well, yeah, it will be. So again, we just have to cross our fingers that this pandemic will go down and not go up again. So I hope for everybody that we can be loyal to all this regulation in every country, so we can try to keep this down to the minimum and respect the rules. I think that's the only way to do it. We can hope.
We've spoken about the financial aspect and also the scheduling. And as you said, with European Cups, particularly the second and third tier, it's going to be tricky. Do you think that there'll be a moment to pause for the IHF, the EHF, for all of these federations to think about the way we schedule things as well? Because it seemed like all sports were completely kind of untouchable when it comes to schedules and TV contracts and everything associated with it. Like, no matter what happens, sport will continue and we'll just persevere. But I think this has proven that that's not necessarily the case. It's not the case at all, that these things are very much in danger of being torn apart with world events. Do you think that will cause anyone to think about scheduling, like player pressure when it comes to playing, and also just the way we approach these tournaments? Or will it be a case of just hope it never happens again and continue as if nothing happened before in a few months' time?
That's a hard question. That's if I have the answer of this, maybe I we'll have a lot of money, but but in this case, I'm not sure, because the only thing we can be sure about is that we don't know what happened. So for a lot of people and the federation, of course, in different sports, they don't know. They just try to do the best, and we will see. And in the end, I hope for if we can see next summer, for example, and look 1 year back, and we can say, oh, that's a good job. But that's because I don't believe we are back on track before 21. So that it's in my head, only with spectators and everything. It will be, for me, okay. It will be good if it's happened before, but it will be strange for me that so many people are suffering and dying around Europe about this. And then we suddenly, in sport, untouchable, and we can do whatever we want. I'm not sure that a positive signal for everybody. So I'm not sure that maybe we should go in front and just take our responsibility.
Assuming everything is okay then by the September comes, or at least we'll have the league back and going, we'll end on a positive note with Sjofok and the new squad you have for your first season as head coach. Is it the squad that you are 100% happy with? And can you tell us a bit about some of the players you brought in? I mean, some big players you need to replace as well with Penka retiring.
Yeah, that's maybe the only one I'm not so happy about. No, I respect her because she's a fantastic handball player. So you cannot replace Penka with another player, but we can do a little bit different kind of playing. And the new players who are coming inside, I'm sure that they will, close this gap, because our team next season will be a little bit, we will have more players, so we will have a little bit more to play on. So we have... in every position, two quality players. So for me, it will be very good to start up again. So first time, last season, we just have one right back with left-handed. And now we have two quality players in this position. Nicoleta Kirsch, Hungarian national team player, and Van Reyden from the Dutch national team in this position. So they are strong and also different kind of playing types. So for me, they will bring a lot of good things into the team. Of course, we have Tamara Horacek, a young player from France, played in France and in the national team of France. Young, and she has the future in front of her, and I hope we can continue her development, because she will be one of the best players in this handball Europe for some years now. So we will see what happens. And Danik, new player, Danik Schneller in the pivot, will also bring in this defense quality we always need. So I think with Kathy, they will be the very good pivot team. So very satisfied with that. Dina Eckler in the goalkeeper position will be also very good. When Silje told me that she will go to Djør, I was quite fast to take contact with this Dina Eckler, because she, in my eyes, also one of the best goalkeepers in Europe. So she will be also good for our team too, because we have for some years now good goalkeeper teams. So yeah, it's look very positive. So yeah, it's nice. So. And of course, Gabriela Toth, new, also young playmaker from ERD. She also in the national team of Hungary. So for me, it's good to have also the backup behind Nere Pena and Njonsi Njombla. So for me, it's good to have a lot of tools in my toolbox. So we will see. I think we can play really good handball also next year with this team. So yeah.
So definitely a lot to be excited about. I think we have talked about a lot of serious things in this podcast. I hope you didn't bring your mood down too much, but it's nice to finish on
the. No. I'm so motivated.
That's good.
So and of course, I also bring a new coach in my coaching team, Daniel Birklund from Norway, and he has also a long. Career in the Norwegian Federation, and is also what I was looking for. Really good analytic guy who have experience with the national teams and a top league women handball in Norway. So it also will be very good to work with him. So our philosophy will just continue. So that I was also happy that he signed this contract with Sjofok. So yeah. I'm looking forward to attack this the new season with a lot of motivation. So
Yeah, exciting. Exciting stuff. Yeah, lots of big names coming in, some world champions as well. And really, well, as long as we get going again, hopefully sooner rather than later, exciting times for yourself, Bent, and Sjofok. Thank you so much for joining us today and chatting to us. I hope you, hope you stay healthy and in time for the wedding as well. And good luck with that. Congratulations. And we'll talk to you very soon.
For you too also, guys. It's a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
So that was Bent Dahl. Thank you very much, Bent, for taking the time out. His second time on the podcast, and it's always good to talk to him. He always has a lot of wonderful insight. And I think it's fair to say, Chris, there was, at the beginning of that interview, a little bit of frustration in his voice when he was looking back at the decisions made by the Hungarian Federation about that league finishing position, taking on last season's results for the qualification for the Champions League for next season.
Yeah, you've got to feel bad for them. You know, the way they were set up for this coming season as well, and the way they had left it just before the virus, you know, being second in the Hungarian League, beating FTC literally a week before the pandemic shut everything down, beating Dürr a few weeks before that, sitting pretty in the league and the HF Cup and the Hungarian Cup as well. And, you know, the way he spoke about like setting up the playbook as well and like preparing himself for his first season as head coach. And the players are bringing in as well. You know, they've snatched a couple of good players in Laura van der Heijden and Danik Snelder. Also, Dina Ekula in as goalkeeper, who was probably one of the best goalkeepers of the Women's World Championship in December. So they'd really like built up this nice team that I think would have made a good run for it in the Champions League next season. Maybe there's still a small chance they can still get in, sneak in on some kind of EHF decision, but I don't know. I think it's a bit too early to discuss that. Yeah, definitely let it go a little bit with time, but it's a hard one to accept when on the court they were doing so well.
But I suppose in a weird way, well, it's not a weird way, but in a different way, had this not even happened and had they qualified for the Champions League, he would have been there as the assistant coach. And now he's taken on the role of head coach. So he can now do what Tor never did, basically. Taking away those circumstances. So in a weird way, he could be the guy to take them to that next level. So it's kind of an extra motivation for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is the start of the documentary, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. This is the start of the Netflix documentary.
I think we're all caught by the Last Dance fever here, looking for handball's version of it.
Yeah, we call it the first dance.
The first dance. That's very fitting, seeing he's getting married again.
Absolutely,
in a few weeks.
Yeah, so it's literally
there you go. Right, here's one for you then, Brian, before we go on to our second interview. Off the top of your head, if you were to choose a handball player or a handball team focused around one player to have a Michael Jordan Last Dance Netflix/ESPN style documentary to be based on, who would you choose?
Well, I was watching it. I only started watching it yesterday, actually.
Oh.
And I was watching it and I was thinking kind of the same thing. And then I was watching Dennis Rodman and I was thinking that people used to make the comparison with him and Stefan Kretschmer. And I was like, Stefan Kretschmer is nowhere near as crazy as Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman used to turn up in wedding dresses and stuff like that to game. So I don't think it's in the same ballpark. But I mean, Stefan Kretschmer might have been a good one back in the day. I'm trying to think there. I think possibly maybe the Karabatic brothers at Paris, possibly. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I'd say you'd have to go with following the Vardar team when they won their second Champions League. I think that has to be it. I don't know who you'd focus on as a player exactly, but you could probably just focus on the team. But that would have been an incredible behind-the-scenes documentary with all the problems they had and all the different storylines that were going on there and then how they won it in the end as well. It was just an incredible story. So I think that would be a good one. What about the women? Could you think of one for the women?
Well, I think that CSM Bucharesti Champions League winning season, that would be a good one to follow. But also the story, I mean, this one ends quite tragically, is Larvik, because they're a team that, you know, the early 2010s were at the top of the game. You know, they won the Champions League. They got to the final back in 2015, and then things went downhill very quickly. You know, they just secured their promotion back up to the top division, but it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be the Larvik we we knew and loved. And there were lots of big names there as well. You know, you had the Hammersing Aidens, you had the Merks in there. You know, there's the core of that golden generation of Norway as well from the late 2000s, where they, you know, they won four European championships in a row, won the Olympics and won the World Championship. So a lot of big names there in like a golden generation for the club. So yeah, going back, if there was the footage there, that would be a good one for Larvik. But I think I have to agree with you on the men's side about Vardar in that second season. That would be pretty class. Maybe one, you know, that is on the way up is Sagerson going to Kiel.
Oh yeah.
You know, in the next few years of that could be the start of something special.
Yeah.
You know, if they can get a nice team together, and the bromance between Sander Sagerson and Rune Dampke, you know, the future brothers-in-law.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. We need a handball documentary, don't we, Chris?
There you go.
So
if somebody wants to give us a few million euro to get going, you know where to find us. We'll get it done.
I think a wild card would be the Sri Lankan national handball team that went missing. You know, I think that would be a good kind of quirky documentary also. Not the same as obviously The Last Dance, but something a little bit more mysterious. But I think it's a good story. Mm. One of the best stories, I think, in any team sport that I've heard anyway.
Yeah, we have the movie of it, but we don't have the documentary yet.
True, yeah.
So there's interesting. Yeah. And speaking of Vardar, and I think it's a nice intro there with your mention of them as a potential candidate for a handball doc is, well, I mean, this could be a continuation of the documentary because they're back again. You know, they have had one season where it seemed everything was doomed yet again with. You know, we spoke to Christian Dissinger a few podcasts ago about the situation in Skopje, and it seemed like he was on the verge of going as well, not because he wanted to, but just because he was forced to. But it seems like they're back, and he was happy enough to sign for them alongside a host of other players. We'll speak about that in more detail with Vardar's revival, their new owner, and also Eurofarm Pelister, this combination of Pelister and Eurofarm Robotnik, who seem to be signing some big names themselves and could be a proper challenger in the Macedonian League and maybe in the second tier of European competition as well. So we have Philip Mishov, a journalist, who's going to join us from Skopje, going to tell us all about that and the ins and outs of both of these potentially big clubs for next season.
Something we were talking about just before you came on there, we were talking about obviously the virus and everyone staying at home and everyone is watching a lot of Netflix. And one of the things which people are watching lately is the Michael Jordan documentary. I don't know if you've seen it or seen of it. We were just saying if you could make a handball version of that, we were saying that probably the Vardar story and the way that there's so many ups and downs would definitely make a good documentary.
Yeah, I agree with that because I'm also a journalist, but I'm also a big fan of Vardar, and I was in attendance when they were celebrating the title, and I think it would be appropriate to make such a documentary for this success. And I think those mentality of Michael Jordan that he shared with his teammates applies also for this Vardar team. And I have a few thoughts about who will be the Jordan of Vardar in this star team, and in my mind comes Čupić, Stoilov, and Dibirat, but I think Stoilov as the captain would be the proper leader for those series.
Yeah, I think Stoilov would be a good one, but he's not doing any slam dunks.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit now about this new rise. I think people often like to think, oh, Vardar are finished now, and they've said it a lot of times. I've given up saying it now. I'll never say it again, because now they really look like there's some really good things going on there, and I think your activity on Twitter has highlighted a lot of that.
Everyone thought that this is the end, but the former owner, because Mr. Mihailovsky, was owner of Vardar before Samsonenko. He Samsonenko took over the club from Mihailovsky, and that started this star era, which I would like to call it. And I don't know, it's strange to see there is more actions and ongoings in Macedonian handball
during the pandemic than before. I don't know how that happened, honestly. I'm really surprised by that, but I'm also very happy that Vardar will stabilize, because I don't think there is a man in Macedonia handball who doesn't believe in Mr. Mihailovski, because he's a man of his words, and he proved that with the latest moves. And I think his reaction is a little bit provoked by Pelister's moves, because the competition drives two teams forward, and after a lot of years, there will be a log derby again in Macedonia, Pelister versus Kopi.
And tell us a bit about the timeline with Mihailovski then and taking over. How long has it been something that was talked about? Do you feel it was always going to be on the cards with the talk of the club going down? And at what point did he decide that he was going to step in and save the day?
Vardar's story was about to end last year, actually. But no one predicted that they would win the title. Even then, there was a talk that Mihailovski would take over the club from Samsonenko, but he didn't want to do it because the club was full with debts, and he left the club to Samsonenko free of debts. So Vardar won the title, and Samsonenko couldn't leave Vardar. He couldn't leave Vardar in that state, and the story continued. He made some promises, but he also asked for help from the country and from other sponsors to help him maintain Vardar at this high level. We all thought that that's it, because, I don't know, Vardar signed Toledo. I think that was a bold statement that, again, some quality players are coming to Skopje, but things didn't improve. Players started to go down drastically, and that combined with the financial problems that Vardar had. And then Kristapans left first, Atman, and also there were a lot of injured players, but I think there was a combination of financial issues and injury problems. But Mr. Mihailovski always looked with a close eye on Vardar happenings. And I think his main wish was to take over the ownership and make Vardar his own club again. And he's doing that. And one part of this is changing the name now with the year that when Vardar was founded, 1961. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very good thing that Mihailovski comes back and he does bold moves to keep the core of the Vardar, especially Stoilov, Čupić and Dibirov. And when Dibirov signed that contract, I think now everyone knows that Vardar will continue to rise again, because he's a Russian. His Russian owner left, but he's staying in Macedonia to play with the other guys. So I think there's a very good development for and a sign for other players to come in Skopje and play for Vardar again.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people or a lot of players maybe might have been a little bit careful about signing for Vardar with all those rumors going around about wage problems and stuff like that. And you said here, Mihailovski is a man of his word. So I think maybe the culture of the club is going to change, do you think?
Yes, because I as I said, I think he's a man of his words, and people will believe him, because he's a very good relationship with some of the players, because he knows them before that. Mihailovski knows Stoilov, Mihailovski knows Vistovsky, and he has leaders in the dressing room who will address those concerns and will talk with the players about that. But Mr. Samsonenko signed contract with the players with whom he have debts, and he will play his arrears till the end of the year, I think. Maybe a sign that things will stabilize and people will... I don't think Dibirov or the other guys will continue to play for Vardar for free, because they're good players and they have other offers on their tables. They will not stay in Skopje and have a second year in a row without payment.
You know, it was only a couple of months ago, just before the pandemic struck, a couple of weeks before the last 16 was going to take place. We had Christian Dissinger talk to us on the podcast, and, you know, he... You know, it was almost heartbreaking the way he spoke about the situation. You know, he said in a perfect world, he would stay because everything about the club is perfect and the way, you know, what's available to the players. But the fact that there was no money is something that was just not sustainable. And it seemed like against his wishes, he would have to leave. So the fact that he has also stayed on is a big sign of intent. And looking at some of the players as well that have been confirmed or are rumored as well, like you have Artem Kulak, Miguel Martins, Luke Steins, Ivan Tangen, Angel Hernandez, some of the names that are being thrown around, as well as like Borko Rostovsky, who's signed, and Teleski as well, which is a big sign from the Macedonian handball to bring a local talent back again. Do you think that the ambition of the club is going to be similar to the last years, or is it going to be a kind of a rebuilding or a consolidation phase?
Mr. Mihailovsky said that his main target is to qualify for the knockout stage and get to a step closer to the Final Four, maybe the quarterfinals. The Final Four in the Seha Liga and the Double Crown in Macedonia. So I think they're going to with that target to achieve that, and their mission will depend on who they sign for a replacement for Skube and for Kristapans. Now Vardar is missing a world class playmaker and a quality right back. So they're covered on the wings, they're covered on keeper's position, they're covered on left back with three quality players, I believe, in Dissinger, Santalov and Taleski, and they're missing only players at central back as a playmaker and right back. So I believe that if they sign the right player to replace Kube and Kristapans, Vardar can go far in the season again. Especially if the new season starts with playing matches with fans in the arena.
Yeah, that's it.
And out of all the rumors that you've heard so far, which ones do you think would be most fitting to take on a good role in Vardar?
There are a lot of rumors right now, and a lot of players propose to Vardar because they hear good things about the club and they want to play in the city. And definitely, this is the dream signing of Mr. Mihailovsky, whom he has a good relationship with, is bringing back Igor Karatich from Kiel. Mm-hmm. He would be a dream signing for all the fans and for himself, the owner, but that depends on many factors, and that's why I said it's a dream signing kit, because it's not easy to sign Karacic from Kiel to now and bring him back. But the last rumor I heard about and from people close to the club is that the Holland player Steins is of an interest about Vardar, and Mr. Mihailovsky confirmed himself that they want Martins from Porto, but the latest news are that he isn't willing to go to Skopje and he wants to prolong his career in Portugal. So there is an open hole, I would say, position in the middle of the park at Vardar, to a big shoes to fulfill, and it all depends on signing the right playmaker to fulfill that position. Also can be set, as I said, for the right back position. But a statement of intent was maybe signing Taleski a few days ago, because he's the third left back to sign in the last couple of weeks. So I don't know. Three left backs, and it's a big competition, and
yeah,
a big club, yeah. So
And it's funny, Crystal Pan's out and then Luke Stein's in. The biggest player in handball and the smallest player in handball, come back. Time's changing in Vardar.
That happened with Skube and Christoph Hansen. But I think if Skube and for a fact, actually, I know that if Vardar had found and made these moves a few months ago before Skube and Shishkarov signed for Vesprem and Meshkov, they would have surely stayed at Vardar. Because as Dissinger said to you, no one wants to leave a dream team who is aiming for the highest honors.
Yeah, we got, I guess, not confirmation, but heard from our Portuguese source, Marcio Menino, that about what you said with Miguel Martins not willing to go at this stage. I think he's quite happy in Portugal. But Luke Steins, I think he fits very well in the mold of Stas Skuba. So, you know, he'd be replacing one speedy short player with another. And he was very good in the Euro as well. I think he showed that he fits that level and plays at a good level in France as well. And I want to just ask you about the, I think it was already a commitment from the club that they would have 50% Macedonian players. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Mihailovski said in the first interview after overtaking the club that he would like at least to have 50% of Macedonian players. And he actually kept his word and he signed the players he had, like Stoilov, Ristovski, and the other young guys like Mishovski. And a bold statement for that is bringing Talevski back to Skopje.
Mm.
Because they chased Talevski in the last couple of seasons. They offered him a contract last season, but he ended up signing, staying in Germany, actually. But now Mr. Mihailovski personally talked Talevski and persuaded him to come back to Skopje and play for Vardar. So I think that is an interesting move who will also be a good sign for the Macedonian national team, because in the national team he plays with Stoilov too, and they can further develop a partnership. And Talevski needed, I think, to make a step backwards to make two step forward, because he didn't find himself in a good place at Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he went too early in Germany, and he knows that he hasn't developed as he wanted or as the German clubs wanted. So I think this is a key move for him to really kickstart his career at the highest level. So it's a one-year contract. Maybe he'll flourish finally and start playing to his best. And there are all the factors for him to succeed. He has a Macedonian owner who wants him at Vardar, Macedonian coach who wants him at Vardar, and all the fans who will be really happy to have a Macedonian player in their favorite team. So it's a big move for him, and I think there is a big chance for him to stay at Skopje if he starts playing really well for Vardar, because he must be at his best if he wants to play, because he has Dissinger and Santalov on his position. I don't think they will accept anything less than scoring goals and having a key role in the defense. So it's up to him, really.
I suppose not only for Vardar, but the Macedonian League got a big boost with the news of Eurofarm Pelister. Maybe talk to us a little bit about the moving and shakings going on over there.
Actually, I was last year at their first game back in the Champions League. They played Sporting Lisbon, and back then their name was still only Eurofarm. There were two clubs, and with the new project there was a fusion within the clubs, and now there is a Eurofarm Pelister. And in the first game, their supporters, which are called Schembery, weren't at the arena because they were angry about them playing in a blue jersey, because Pelister have always had their green logo and everything about that. So at the last game versus Nexe, the arena was full. There was a feeling of the handball coming back to to the city where I always belonged, in Bitola. And their big project has a deal with a community to comprehend for in the budget and support them in the next 5 years, along with the sponsor at Ofarm, which is a pharmacy company. So they're a serious contender, and now I believe they're favorite for the title in Macedonia. But that may change if Vardar signed the right players at their two key positions at center back and right back. But they also made big moves, and signing Stipe Mandalinic is a strong move by Željko Babić, who I admire most. And I believe he's a good coach to have in Bitola. And there are also other players there who will want to continue and play well for the club and play in front of the fans. But like Vardar, they're also missing some players, and they have a big hole to fill at the keeper's position, where Nikola Mitrovski left, and he's joining Porto from the upcoming season. So there will be a big competition in the Macedonian League this season, especially with Pelister and Vardar. And it's actually pretty good to have Pelister back competing with Vardar for the title.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And you mentioned the goalkeeper area, this one missing at the moment. But, you know, some of the names that have been attached with it, like Adam Borbély, who has experience with Płock and in Hungary, and Mirko Alilovic in particular, who I was talking to Brian before, and, you know, I thought he was about 40 years old, but he's only 34. he's been around forever, but he's still only 34, Alilovic.
Yes. There are a lot of names thrown there for the vacant position, but one of the local media talked about Alilovic, that he has an open offer to join Pelister, but it depends on the negotiations with him and his salary demands, because Željko Babić showed he is a crucial factor in making moves, bringing Croatian players in Bitola, and that was the move with Stipe Mandalinic and Maraš on the right back position. So I really think Alilović would join Pelister if they satisfy his demands, because Pelister played last year in the Champions League. They will apply for a wild card to play in this year's Champions League, and their goal is to take over the throne from Vardar back in Bitola. And Babić will definitely talk to Alilović, with whom he has a good relationship. I don't know what will happen, but I think there is a chance if the negotiations go in a positive way. But anyway, who comes in between the sticks, it will have a big job, because Nikola Mitrovski was really impressive at last year Champions League, and he was one of the players who were of interest about the keeper's position at Vardar, but he wanted to continue in Portugal. One interesting information I heard was that the new goalkeeper of Vardar, Cantegrel, had also an offer from Pelister, but in the end he chose to go to Vardar. So the rivalry is back on the field, but it's also back in the transfer market.
Yeah, he's already made himself a few enemies.
yes, definitely. And what I've heard about him, he definitely wants to make enemies and show that on the field.
Ah, you need that. That's a good sign, I think.
Yes.
Brilliant. Philip Mishov, thank you so much for your time. It was great to chat to you about what seems to be a brand new era in Macedonian handball and a resumption of a great rivalry. So I'm pretty sure we'll be talking to you again about it when we finally get some action on the court again, hopefully in the near future. So thank you so much.
It was really nice to talk to you guys, and I hope I will be your guest soon enough with all the latest developments. And till then, I will continue to share my thoughts and information on my Twitter account. So it was really nice to talk to you. I'm honored to be your guest.
Another episode of the Uninformed Handball Hours in the books from me, Brian Campion, and from Chris O'Reilly. We'll say goodbye and we'll see you next time.